All right, now we're rolling.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Throttle Talk. I am your host, Big Yeti from Ride With Purpose, and welcome to episode 10 of the podcast. So usually right now we do our thank you to our awesome sponsor, Jason Weicker, the motorcycle lawyer, but we're not going to do that this week because we have Jason on the phone. So welcome to the show, Jason.
Hey, Rob, how are you? Great
I'm doing,
to be here.
Yeah, awesome. I'm doing great, man. We're surviving up here. It's crazy, crazy weather we're getting up here in northern Michigan, from severe cold to extreme heat, it seems like. Mother Nature doesn't know what to do.
Hey, I'm in Southfield, and I'm all over the state with what I do, but we're feeling the same thing down here.
That's awesome. That's awesome. So, yeah, man, I got a few questions for you that I wanted to ask and, you know, get to know you guys a little bit more. You and I, we've spoken a few times on the phone. I talked to Miss Shelby quite a bit. She's been
good.
She's wonderful, man. You guys are very, very lucky to have her. She's been on top of sending me stuff for swag to give out at our dinner rides and checking in and everything else. I see her at all the events, and she's just a pleasure to be around.
Oh, it's good to hear. Yeah, so Shelby is my marketing lady, as I call her, and she drives the motorcycle truck out to all the events and gives out all our swag and good stuff, and she's doing a great job, so I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, she's been awesome to work with. So actually had the pleasure seeing her this past weekend in West Branch at Bike Bash, and
yeah.
We were sending everybody over there to get the Bike Bash bucks. So Brother Mook and I went to work in the field out there doing stuff and trying to get everyone to go over to the tent to say hi and pick up some stuff and pick up the bike bags.
Great.
Yeah, so, but yeah, man, I know you've been doing this a long time, so I got, I don't know, 10 or so questions for you, so let's get into them.
I'm ready.
All right, so you've been riding, you're a rider, you know, you just don't put on the suit and do the lawyer talk. You actually ride, and you represent injured bikers. So how has your personal riding experience shaped your courtroom strategy and your client empathy?
Oh, yeah, you're right. It does help. You know, I've been playing in the dirt for, you know, since I was a little kid. And then once I could get on the road, I did. I've had a, you know, Fat Boy and a Moto, Cafe Moto Guzzi, Cafe Racer Moto Guzzi, and everything in between, it seems like. But, you know, just taking the motorcycle class and getting your motorcycle endorsement, if a lawyer were to just do that, they would know a lot more than most folks. And I really see the defense attorneys I go with, and I can't even believe they say it in the deposition. They say to my client, well, I don't know anything about motorcycle riding. What gear are you in when you, you know, go around the corner or right before the accident? And I just kind of laugh to myself. Had a defense attorney that has ever been on a motorcycle before, you know, they would be ahead of the game.
Oh,
so I think it does.
Absolutely.
It helps tremendously.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, being a rider as well. So you get to see both sides of it. Cause you understand, you know, what we feel as riders, as bikers, you understand our desire to be out there and what it means for us to be out there. And, you know, what I see, you know, I mean, that has to help you fight for that client to get them back, not only just on the road, but just to take care of them.
It does. And, you know, like the defense attorney might say, like, oh, you should have been able to avoid this. Or, you know, they'll say something stupid like, why didn't you, you know, you're in this big curve. Why didn't you brake harder? Or why didn't you brake? And they say something stupid that I know won't be supported by any expert they hire. So I know where to go and how to litigate it, whether it's in the deposition or on paper in motions later. So you're right.
Yeah. Awesome. Speaking of litigating, you've published, litigating motorcycle injury and wrongful death cases. What is the one pivotal lesson you've learned there that every rider or lawyer should know?
Right. So you're talking about a book I wrote years ago, and it's actually to lawyers. So lawyers across the country would order this book to help them with, kind of, I disclosed a lot of my tricks and things that I've figured out, helpful things to help motorcyclists and how to litigate these cases the best way possible for the motorcyclist, the victim. And I would go back to if a lawyer that wants to represent motorcyclists, if they took that motorcycle safety class to get a motorcycle endorsement, they again would be way ahead of the game. Also in that book, I teach them how to get rid of or defeat what's called motorcycle bias. Mm-hmm. A lot of lay people, a lot of jurors just start from square one. Adjusters, judges start from square one, and they have a bias, a prejudice against motorcyclists. And I've developed some techniques how to defeat that. And then also how to deal with it in what's called voir dire. Voir dire is jury selection. Okay. And how to talk about it with jurors. I just say, there's something that worries me. A lot of people think it's automatically or the motorcyclist's fault just for getting on the motorcycle. Right. How do you feel about that? Where do you stand about that? So things like that are in that book. So that's my answer.
Yeah, no, that's great, man. It's like I said, knowing what it's about and understanding, the biker and the freedom of the road that we feel is important. I feel anyways. That's why I'm more drawn to, lawyers and attorneys and businesses that actually understand that and ride and understand that love and passion that we have. So,
yeah. Good point.
Something I found, I did a lot of research on you last couple of weeks, in preparation for this interview. So something that I found that I really, like and admire about you is your bystander assistance program. This has trained over 2,500 Michigan riders in first aid. So why is on-scene training critical, and what are the gaps, and what gaps do you see to help bikers in preparedness?
Sure. So for people that don't know, I had a firm, in my firm, I had a lady named Debbie Perinello. And she learned about a bystander assistance class, which is national class, founded by Vicky Sanfilippo. She's a nurse and she's a motorcyclist. And she started this class and kind of has it accredited and figured out all the things motorcyclists might want to know first aid wise, rescue breathing. If they have to remove a helmet, you don't want to, the proper way to do that. If you have to move the motorcyclist after a crash, the proper way to safe way to do that. If you have to lift a motorcycle off of a motorcyclist, the proper safe way to do that for everybody. Scene management. A lot of times when an accident happens and people are helping the motorcyclist, helpers, other people, pedestrians in that case, could get hit by a second accident. So this class was developed to help with all those things. And Debbie said, we don't have this in Michigan, and I think this is something you should do. And she was right. So she became an EMT just to teach our basic class. And then after a couple years, people wanted to take the advanced class. So she became a paramedic just to teach our advanced class. And over 10, 15 years, we patched 2,500 Michigan motorcyclists through this program, and I would pay for a percentage of the fee for the class.
Okay.
So I've sponsored it and brought it to Michigan, and I'm really proud about that. So what's funny is I used, of course I've taken the class and I speak at and give the legal portion of the class. So I've actually taken the class a number of times just because I'm hanging out.
Right.
And I carry a medical bag in my trunk of my car and in my saddlebag. And I also roll with a dash cam.
Right.
I literally saw a car flip over in front of me 2 weeks ago.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And I ran out, got my medical bag. And I pulled a little kid out of the rear of the vehicle. It was upside down. The back windshield was off, or was blown out. And then got the other people out of the vehicle and then went over and helped the lady that kind of caused the accident. Nobody was talking to her. She's hyperventilating, really, really upset, calmed her down. So I actually used this stuff, which was pretty exciting. And you can see that video on the motorcycle lawyer, or on our Facebook page, the motorcycle lawyer, it's pretty good. Shelby edited a video. I said, you guys, I saw, you know, I can't believe what happened today. And I showed him the video. She grabbed it. And next thing I know, she created this cool video that shows that, that shows the vehicle flipping over because my dash cam caught it. Now back to your question. Just being prepared and having that bag with, I carry a tourniquet. Right. And all kinds of bandages, rubber gloves, rescue breathing equipment and stuff like that. And I roll with it in my car, not just my motorcycle. So you can help a fellow motorcyclist if they go down. And in a case that I had recently, I have, you know, these police officers are rolling with not just dash cam, but with body cam. We have body cam footage of a police officer using a tourniquet that they keep. They have a medical bag in the trunk, a lot of them, and he put a tourniquet on a motorcyclist in a bad wreck that we represented. Mm-hmm. And the motorcyclist lost his leg, but he was bleeding so profusely, the ER doctor said he may have died, but because of the tourniquet that was put on immediately, the motorcyclist was saved. So the tourniquet is something that we recommend in that bag. And then to the other points of your question, I think a lot of motorcyclists are conscientious. They think about this. They ride with a lot of the good equipment. Right. And there's just, that using the 1% argument that there's those 1%ers of the group. I'm not saying 1%ers. I'm using the old saying that phrase came about way back when,
right,
during the famous speech of the AMA. But I think for the most part, motorcyclists are conscientious. They want to learn this stuff, and they're riding with the right gear. So I think your answer is in there somewhere.
Yeah.
But no, go watch that video. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I'll actually put a link to that video for those watching on YouTube. I'll actually put a link to that video in the description and on our podcast as well. I will make sure to figure out how to put a link into the description of the podcast.
Okay, that'd be cool.
And then maybe we'll even show it here on the channel as well. But definitely go check that out over at the Motorcycle Lawyer. I saw it the morning it came out, and I was like, "Whoa, insane!" You know, like, so that was really cool for me. Like, I carry a small first aid kit. And then I have a couple of tourniquets. One I wear on my cut. I have side laces on my vest that I took out and put tourniquet style stuff in there. So in case of an emergency, I could at least use that.
Oh, good for you.
And then I have one on as a, on my handlebars as well. So just in case,
wow,
I get to that, you know, cause tourniquet's a big deal. I think of all the things to carry, at least have that on you to help out. That's something I learned over my time overseas. If you're going to carry something, at least carry that.
Yeah. And then I know guys that are really into carrying a firearm and they've learned that as well in some of their classes, that they roll with a tourniquet because with a GSW or gunshot wound,
right,
that's a key piece of medical equipment. And that's what they did with all the guys overseas. Like you're saying, is they start, each soldier was carrying their own personal tourniquet.
Yeah.
Yep. They went to that and it ended up was a huge statistical thing that was saving a lot of lives.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One of the coolest things I think I've seen in a long time, and I actually remember this when it happened and it was announced, was last May of 24, you won a triumphant $27.5 million verdict.
Oh yeah.
Can you walk us through the most challenging moments of that case and how it secured such a landmark victory?
Sure. You just ask a lawyer about a war story like this and they'll just tear your ear off or chew your ear off with going on and on. But yeah, this is I'm real proud. And this is the guy I was talking about, is the guy that lost his leg. We set a record verdict in Michigan for any motorcyclist in the history of Michigan litigation. It was the biggest jury verdict in history. And it was $27 million. It was against a lady who was distracted driving. She was on her cell phone and she was actually using the cell phone to, she had an app open and she was checking her blood glucose level. And you ever see the little plastic disc on the back of someone's tricep?
Yes, yes.
That's because they're diabetic and they need to check their sugar level. So she was using her phone to do that. She's looking down, and she went left of center and just scraped the side of this motorcycle and caused a lot of damage to his leg. Mm. So real proud of that.
Yeah, I mean, it was everywhere. I mean, this is long before I knew you or anyone on your team, and it was everywhere I looked, and every biker Facebook page and all over the place. It was like, you know, the World Series was won.
Oh, that's good to know. I also got a lot of play in just the trial lawyer community. Because it was such a landmark thing. A lot of people, I got some press just in the legal community from it too. So that was the fun.
Yeah. I mean, it's, luckily the man survived, which is good news. And, he's able to kind of put his life back together in some way, shape or form. And, you know, it also brought attention. What I found more important, other than his survival, right, of course, it brought attention to distracted driving.
For sure. You know? And you're absolutely right. And that was part of my answer is it really helped the family, just changed their lives and got this guy back on track and back to a semblance of somewhat of a normal life after that.
Right.
So it's good to see, what you do is really, really helping somebody and their family.
Exactly. It's very impactful. You're also an active member of ABATE, as am I. And where do you see the most pressing need for an improved motorcycle safety laws or public awareness? And what are the goals that you'd be advocating for next within the ABATE program?
Right. So I'm a lifelong ABATE member, and they're the ones that are out, you know, when it comes to motorcycle laws, it's really the group that gets things done. And the worst law that's out there right now, it happened just a couple years ago, maybe 3 years now. We went to a PIF medical choice situation on our motorcycle, on our no fault insurance. I'm sorry. And, with our cars, trucks and vans, we now choose the amount of PIF medical we have. It used to be unlimited forever. So anybody that was in a motor vehicle crash, that means that if the car, truck, or van is involved, you're entitled to no fault benefits. And before three years ago, everybody got unlimited PIP medical for life. A motorcyclist, if they get hit by a car, truck, or van, or it's their car, truck, or van's involved in the wreck, the motorcyclist would get unlimited PIP medical. Well, what happened was we switched to this. A motorcyclist gets their PIP medical from the vehicle involved, the motor vehicle involved. So the car, truck, or van, that guy's insurance pays for the medical bills for the motorcyclist.
Correct.
And the problem is we motorcyclists now, we still go to that car's medical, PIP medical coverage, but we're subject to what that guy chose for himself.
Right, right.
So instead of unlimited, we now choose $50,000, $250,000, $500,000 or unlimited on our cars, trucks, or vans. And if this other guy, this negligent driver, chose for himself only $50,000, that's what the motorcyclist is stuck with. Now, I don't think they intended this because they didn't understand the new. I know a lot of really good auto lawyers that do not understand the nuances of motorcycle laws and how the no fault law applies to motorcyclists, because it's very convoluted and intricate. But that's what's happening for the past 3 years. Mm-hmm. Motorcyclists are getting their PIP medical from the car and it's not unlimited. And oftentimes motorcyclists can be stuck with medical bills. Or instead of putting pain and suffering money in their pocket, it's going to medical bills and they're getting nothing. So that's what needs to be changed. And I think ABATE is probably the best organization to do it.
No, I agree 100%. I'm a very proud member of ABATE. I was a former area coordinator for our region up here in Region 3.
That's great.
We really grew our region up here and, you know, trying to change some things and in the And my goal was to try to change the look of what a bait, you know, is in the motorcycle community. A lot of younger people think it's just a bunch of old people who are talking about grass clippings in the road, and there's much, much more than that. So what we did up here, we actually kind of changed a little bit of the culture of it and got some more younger people involved. And, you know, I'm no longer as active as I once was in the region. I'm more focused now on the big picture with the state and doing what I can to echo their voice of both, you know, Abate and the Motorcycle Riders Foundation, which is an organization that is pretty much Abate, but on a nationwide level. And, you know, try to echo their voice in my own words and get the stuff out there. And I think it's very important to have that coming from multiple angles. You know, like it's crazy to me just how many people don't even know what a bait is. And I'm firmly believe if you're on two wheels, you should at least be a member. You don't necessarily have to be as active,
but
at least give that membership.
But good for you. It's needed. So that's awesome.
It's $26 a year, man. Like, you know, it's not that big of a of a spend to make sure. Plus, you know, you get $3,000 worth of life insurance coverage from that, you know, which is you can't get $3,000 of life insurance of $26 a year anywhere.
Right.
So I mean, it ain't much, but it's something to happen just in case.
That's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. So on to the next one here. This one here is like, what's the difference between trial attorneys and these TV attorneys that we see?
Okay. You know, personal injury attorneys, the only threat we have against the literally billion-dollar insurance companies is to actually go to trial and try the case in front of a jury. Mm-hmm. It's the Seventh Amendment gives us that right.
Exactly.
And there are a lot of lawyers, you know, think of all the people who just are scared. Number one fear is public speaking to people. And that's a lot of big public speaking is trying a case. So even smart and sophisticated, educated lawyers, if you look at all the lawyers there are, only about, I don't know, 5 or 10% of them ever go to court.
Okay.
And then of those people, of those 5 or 10% that go to court, I bet you only 5% of those are actually trying cases. And you have all these lawyers out there saying they're litigators and they're personal injury attorneys, but they fold when they go to trial. So it's good to have a lawyer that is actually won in court, can try a case, has experience trying cases, and can get a big result, because it's the only threat that makes insurance companies settle. And after, I'll tell you what, I've had a couple million-dollar verdicts, but after the $27 million one, the insurance companies settle faster and for more. And when we start going to the courtroom steps, they settle is what I can't even get into a courtroom. We had three to go to trial to the courtroom steps, so to speak, and they just settled.
That's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's you know, you're swinging a big stick now, so people are aware of it, and they know. In my opinion, I read about that stuff. It's like, you know, that's kind of where I'm more. If I was injured, you know, I want to go to the guy that's going to do the best for me and my family. And you know, like I said, it's that case from last May was everywhere. I don't think I know. You know, people are still kind of talking about it in the biker community, which is. Yeah. Kind of crazy, you know, because stuff happens so fast.
But
So what would your, you know, talking about all this this legal stuff and what we're getting into, what is your best legal advice for us Michigan bikers?
Okay, so whenever I speak to a motorcycle group, I always try to leave them with three things, and unfortunately it has a lot to do with insurance. So number one, it's to be legal, you have to have insurance on your motorcycle. Mm-hmm. But the better reason to do that is if you don't have insurance on your motorcycle, you don't get no fault benefits. Even when that car hits you, a drunk driver hits you, you're screwing yourself out of no fault benefits, which includes medical bills, wage loss, household chore money, and mileage to and from the doctors. You just have to have the basic minimum policy to be legal and to get those things if you get in a wreck like that. Number two, have more insurance. You need to buy more uninsured motorists and underinsured coverage, because that protects you and is going to pay those excess medical bills potentially in a bad situation now that we're in with that PIP medical choice thing we talked about, and then have health insurance if you can at all afford it, because there are a whole lot of things that can happen where a motorcyclist goes down that don't involve a car, truck, or van, which would get you those medical benefits from no fault. Pothole, loose gravel. I've had the goat case, deer, dogs going wide, another motorcycle. And all those examples, there's no motor vehicle involved under the no-fault law, so there's no no-fault benefits. So the backup plan is to have health insurance so you're not stuck with $100,000 worth of medical bills.
Correct. Well, yeah, it's important. All this stuff I've learned over the last couple of years being involved with the bait and just seeing really just where we're at with all this stuff, which brings us to our next question, which you, in my opinion, you've kind of already answered it for me. But in your opinion, what ways Michigan motorcyclists are getting shafted under our laws? Can you spotlight that for us in your opinion?
Sure. So we already talked about the PIP medical, the number one thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, why are motorcyclists paying into the MCCA fund, Michigan Catastrophic Claims Fund, when, number one, they can't always get no-fault benefits, and number two, the amount can never oftentimes is not higher than the max because the guy chose something lower. Now, if we're talking about something your listener, if you're listening and you don't understand this, go to my website. I got another one called Motorcycle Lawyer Michigan. Go to the videos. I have these 1 minute videos that explain any FAQ you can think of. And it says like, what's the MCCA and who's it for? It's a good little blurb if you aren't following us. And then the other thing is I can talk about the mini tort does not apply to motorcycles. And the mini tort talks about collision coverage. So if you and I, if you're in your pickup truck and I'm in my car, I rear end you and cause damage, you can get your deductible or up to $3,000 from me or my car insurance. Well, again, because of that definition of motor vehicle compared to motorcycle, motorcyclists get shafted and cannot get their deductible from the car driver. There are a couple exceptions, but typically they don't apply in the regular car accident case that we see. And if you want those three exceptions, go to my website and watch the 1 minute video.
Absolutely. And those are some of my favorite things that you put out there. Again, guys, for those who are watching us on YouTube or listening on the podcast, I will put links to all this stuff in the description below. But I definitely, the FAQs that Jason does on his, even on Ask the Motorcycle Lawyer on Facebook is another great page they have where you can come in and ask your own questions and they'll respond.
And we'll get to them. Yeah. That's a good point. Yeah. We'll get to any question you put on there. I will do a video and answer it.
Absolutely. And, I mean, Jason himself actually responds back in the comments about this. And, again, there's really no stupid questions because this whole insurance thing that we have going on is just stupid. You know, it's so difficult for the normal common person to understand that, you know, you almost have to have a PhD to figure some of this stuff out.
Well, even lawyers, I know good lawyers that they call me and say like, how does this work with the motorcycle? And then I go, it's just convoluted. So you're right.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I do appreciate you taking the time and talking with us. I appreciate everything you do for us here at Ride with Purpose and our Some Gave All Veterans Honor Ride that Jason and his team are proudly helping us out with and sponsoring. You know, we do here at Ride with Purpose, you know, we talk about the veterans all the time. And that's really our big spotlight. But we also advocate for us Michigan bikers and try to get the word out there about what we're doing. That's why I'm very proud to be teamed up with a guy like Jason and his crew and what they do, man. So I do appreciate everything you're doing. Thank you for your time. And again, guys, head on over to www.motorcyclelawyer.com and check it out. And on top of all the social media stuff they have going on, I'll put links to every single thing down here in the description below. And
let me make sure that it's themotorcyclelawyer.com is my national site. And then motorcyclelawyermichigan.com is my Michigan site that has all the real specific Michigan stuff. But let me get this out. Rob, we love your show. It's so great to be part of number 10, episode 10, nice round number. And thanks for everything you're doing. And we're so happy to be part of what you got going on. So thank you. And thanks for all those compliments.
You got it, man. That's it, guys. That's all we have this week. We will catch you next week. And as always, ride with purpose. We'll see you next time. Bye.